I'm Andrew Fazekas. This is number 0381, the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
There, hi there, ho there! Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0381. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, Neil Gibson is back. He's the founder and editor of T-Pub Comics, and they have a contest for budding filmmakers that they've started.
I think it's a wonderful opportunity, because whoever wins this, the shortlist, will be shown on a big screen during Chicago Comic Con. The top prize, I think, is $5,000. And you get a lot of exposure, which is great. But the real prize, I think, if you're trying to break into TV and film, is being mentored by someone who's made it in the industry.
Rob Lucy, author of Legacies Aren't Just for Dead People, talks about collecting family stories over the holidays.
Has there been a person in your life who left us and you said, jeepers, I wish I grabbed their story? I think everybody's got that kind of experience. And so what can happen is, with just a little bit of learning, you can start to gather the stories of grandma, of grandpa, of weird old Uncle Charlie, and get those stories so that they don't disappear when they go.
Peter Franklin, the Gabby Cabby, shares a slice of the Big Apple from his yellow mobile conveyance lounge, like how the Trump election is affecting New York.
Like all of our presidents, he's entitled to security. And of course, where his building is, where he lives, is the worst possible place as far as security goes, because it's right smack in the middle of Fifth Avenue, right smack next to Rockefeller Center and the ice skating rink and the Radio City Music Hall and the NBC Studios and in the Saks Fifth Avenue, Tiffany's. So now you go there and it's like very bizarre, because you got lots of cops standing around with machine guns of all things.
And we have lots and lots and lots of stuff, and of course, an idiot of the day, the guest later. The person who told you this was show number 0381 was science writer Andrew Fazekas, the night sky guy. He's also the author of Star Trek, The Official Guide to Our Universe, a great book written by a great writer. Andrew's also a regular contributor to this program. He does a lot of science stuff for us on this show. And he's an all-around great guy with an amazing family to boot. Just all-around great guy. Check out his book, Star Trek, The Official Guide to Our Universe. You can also check out his website, thenightskyguy.com. And you'll find a link to get his book on our website at thestufffile.com. Take a look. It's a great book. Just in time for Christmas for all those Trekkers out there. Thank you very much, Andrew, for doing the guest slate on this program, a program also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Well, let's get right to the stuff, shall we? According to court documents, a Missouri man was curious about sucking someone's blood, so his girlfriend, 19-year-old Victoria Vanader, allegedly gave him permission to cut her arm with a razor and drink some of her blood in the kitchen of a Springfield home. The blood sucking, police say, was followed by arguing. Court documents say there was some yelling and slapping before Vanader grabbed a knife and stabbed the man several times. Vanader then came to, and I'm doing air quotes, and then called 911. According to a statement, Springfield police were sent to the home after a crying woman called 911 and said someone was bleeding. When officers arrived, they found Vanader and the man covered in blood. The statement says Vanader told a Springfield police detective that she drew "I'm sorry" and a heart in blood on a wall in the living room after stabbing the man several times. So, at least she was remorseful. What do you think? Is there a future in that relationship? Well, not when there's a drinking problem, and that drinking is blood, as far as I'm concerned. And I'm guessing the blood type isn't B positive. Yeah. 24-year-old Shogo Takeda landed a job interview with the president of a Yokohama, Japan company that does elevator maintenance. Now, after the interview, the unnamed company president noticed his wallet was missing from his bag. He had briefly left Takeda alone in his office, and no one else had been in the room. When police caught up with Takeda, he admitted that he stole the wallet, which had 50,000 yen, that's about $440 U.S. in cash. "I wanted to work for that company," he told police, "but since I hadn't got a job, I needed money." He was arrested. Gee, I'm guessing now that he won't get the job. At the very least, a raise is out of the question. A Rock Hill, South Carolina police officer saw a car driving erratically, and after pulling the vehicle over, the officer saw the driver, Patrick Butler, squirt Axe body spray into his mouth. Butler had bloodshot eyes and allegedly told the officer he was driving back from Columbia, where he had two beers and a shot of whiskey. When the officer asked Butler why he had sprayed Axe into his mouth, he replied that he was spraying himself from head to toe. Butler allegedly failed the field sobriety tests and was arrested and charged with DUI. I guess spraying Axe all over himself didn't make him as sexy as he had hoped. And 25-year-old Edge Tyler Apodaca of Dos Palos, California, allegedly stabbed a family member more than four times at a Thanksgiving gathering. Apodaca was reported to be upset that his cousin's husband was being too friendly with his wife and put a point to his displeasure. He was arrested, charged with assault with a deadly weapon. It's a close-knit family. Apodaca fathered a child with his cousin, and last year his wife, Jasmine Telto, stabbed Apodaca over her displeasure when she found that he had kept photos of his unclothed cousin. Telto is on probation for that incident. The stabbing victim, an unnamed 36-year-old, survived. Boy, this is one family where perhaps it might have been safer discussing politics and the recent election this Thanksgiving. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our first guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, police patrolling in Jersey City, New Jersey, heard a man yelling, "Help me, I just got stabbed." The victim pointed out his escaping assailant to the officers. He was 20 yards away, walking at a fast pace, away from them, using a walker. Officers caught up with the 70-year-old Andrew L. Stevens almost immediately. A witness confirmed the two men had been arguing, and Stevens pulled out a long knife and stabbed the unnamed 49-year-old victim. Stevens was arrested on charges of aggravated assault, unlawful possession of a weapon, and possession of a weapon for an unlawful purpose. What? He wasn't charged with fleeing the scene or being involved in an extremely low-speed chase? They should have thrown the book at this guy. He is a menace to anyone who isn't near a staircase. Anyway, let's get to our first guest here on the Stuff File program, shall we? Neil Gibson, founder and editor-in-chief of T-Pub, is back on the program. T-Pub is the British comic book or graphic novel publisher and driving force behind such titles as Twisted Dark, Tabitha, Tortured Life, and The World of Chub Chub, just to name a few. They have embarked on a new contest looking for budding filmmakers. And to talk about that and more, Neil joins us now via Skype once again from the UK. Hi, Neil.
Hi, Peter. How are you?
Just tickety-boo. Thanks very much for being back on the program with us. So the hunt for filmmakers, what's that all about?
Oh, it's quite an exciting thing. We're looking for a new generation of filmmakers. Basically, there's a producer in the U.S. who read our comics, and he loved them. He said it was his favorite comics. And he said, I want to help you be where you deserve to be. And he wanted to find some filmmakers to convert this into TV series, into some shorts, which he could take to as a showcase to people. And we also happened to tie up with the director of Stan Lee's Lucky Man. I don't know if you're familiar with that program, but that's Sky Atlantic's most popular program in history. And he's a fan of our comics as well, and he wants to be involved with it. And so he's agreed to be one of the judges, and to whoever the winner is, to mentor them in the TV and film industry.
But so, by the way, I've seen every episode of Lucky Man. I love that show.
Oh, fantastic. Great.
Yeah.
Well, Jamie Charles is directing the new series, and I think it's a wonderful opportunity because whoever wins this, the shortlist will be shown on a big screen during Chicago Comic Con. The top prize, I think, is $5,000, which is all, and you get a lot of exposure, which is great. But the real prize, I think, if you're trying to break into TV and film, is being mentored by someone who's made it in the industry.
Exactly. Exactly. So what exactly do the participants or the entrants have to do, and what will they win?
Well, they win the exposure. They win $5,000 cash if it's the top prize. The second one, I think, is $2,000. And they win mentorship in the film industry. What they have to do for it is they just have to register on our website, which is tpub.co.uk. And then we send them four scripts from the Twisted Dark universe. And in case they're not familiar with it, Twisted Dark is kind of like Tales Unexpected, Twilight Zone, or Black Mirror. It's all short, sharp, punchy stories with twist endings. And so off these four scripts, they've got to pick one and do a 10-minute short film and submit it before the end of March next year. That's pretty much it.
So when did you start with this contest?
The contest launched, I think, a month ago, maybe a month and a half. So far, we've had 700 entrants, but not those people who just registered. A fraction of those will actually get anything made, and a fraction of those will actually submit something to us, and a fraction of those will have something that's good enough to win. So it's a very level playing field, and I encourage anyone who wants to have a go to give it a shot.
Now, who gets to go through all of the entrances? Is that something that's part of your task?
No, we have a bunch of producers, actually, who look at all the shorts. What they're looking for, interestingly enough, is creativity and storytelling, because you can have fancy camera equipment and grading, coloring, and software that does stuff, but how they choose to tell the story with the angles they use, the music, and how it's told is what they're really looking for in creative ways. We've got some entrants doing it all with claymation, for example, some doing it all animated, but most are doing live action.
I was about to ask, one of the things, are you concerned, or should the entrants be concerned about the idea that they, you know, some kids who are looking to get into this, for instance, and as a lark, and think this is a great idea and a fun contest, would be up against others who are actual professionals?
Well, that's exactly why they're looking for creativity over slick professional production values, because otherwise it's an unfair advantage. But if you care about film, it doesn't matter if you've got a low-grade camera. You can even do it on your iPhone. It's quite clear to the directors and producers that you know how to tell a story, and that's what they're after.
Excellent, excellent. So besides that, I mean, it's a great contest. As you say, people have entries will be screened during the Chicago Comic-Con in April.
That's right, yeah, C2E2.
In April 2017. And what's the deadline for getting those entrants in, as you say?
It's in March next year. The exact details I can't remember off the top of my head, but it's on our website, which is www.tpub.co.uk.
And since the last time we talked, I mean, I know you've been doing all kinds of things. You recently had a successful crowdsourcing campaign. What have you been doing? What have you been up to? I mean, I have an idea because I do get your newsletters. But what have you been up to since the last time we chatted?
We've got a bunch of new titles in the works now. The crowdfunding thing was great. That actually closed yesterday. It was funded in 2 days. If anyone wants to read the comic, they can. It's at theatrixcomic.com. But our new projects are quite exciting. We've got... I'm not sure how much I'm allowed to tell, actually, because when we first started the company, I did a lot of the writing, but I moved to more of an editorial role. We get a lot of people submitting comics to us, and we edit their work for them. There's a great one by a guy called Terry Mayo, which the premise is... I don't know if you've ever seen those versus programs. We have, like, Polar Bear versus Rhino, or Tiger versus Lion, and they recreate in the lab what it would be like and who would actually win. So he extrapolated this out into the future, and if cloning existed, and... What if they took people from history? So they have Genghis Khan versus General Custer, for example, and have clones fighting each other. And this becomes the most popular TV show in the world in the future. And then, of course, something goes wrong. And it's a very interesting story. And we've got a bunch of comics like that lined up.
That you should get a T-shirt that says dot, 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 and then, of course, something goes wrong. Because that seems to be the mantra for a lot of the kinds of things that you do. You mentioned you're working more as an editor now. You're not writing as much. Do you miss it?
Oh, well, I still write a lot. People like it, but what I really love doing is editing. I love taking someone else who's a writer who I think is better than me and making them even better, coaching them and pointing out things with their script which could be improved. And it's very much a win-win scenario, because I have this model I show people before I start editing, that if we're going to make any changes to this, if we're going to publish this, both you and I have to agree that this is, that it's good. If there's any change, we both have to agree that it's a better change. And that way we're both happy about the process. And it's funny, almost everyone who works with me with my editing is very, very, what's the word, happy, and they're very pleased with the result. Except for one guy who's actually sitting next to me in the office right now, Ryan. I think he's a brilliant writer. He wrote a Turncoat. But every time we'd have an editing session, it would take him 3 days before he'd stop being angry at me. And then he admitted, okay, fine, maybe you're right.
I'm just curious, since you are still doing some writing, but you're doing this process of editing other people's work, does that process in working on somebody else's material, does that in turn make you a better writer?
I don't know. You'd have to tell me and tell me what my early work compares to now. It's funny. A lot of people used to ask me where you get your inspiration and influences from. And most writers can just list where they get stuff from. For me, it's a lot more I don't tend to take influences from other people. So I don't know if editing other people's work improves my writing. I think it's more a question of the more you do it, the better you get. Hmm.
When you started T-Pub, with a few simple titles, did you envision the things you're doing now and the way you're branching out? I mean, in this film contest, was that part of your grand plan, or are you learning as you go along and T-Pub is just evolving?
It's absolutely evolving. I have the grand vision for where I wanted to be, because I genuinely love the medium. Not so much in America, but in the UK, a lot of people just look down on comics and think it's something you read when you're a kid, and when you grow up, you shouldn't be reading this. And my mission in life is to change that viewpoint. I want people reading it in schools and reading it on the tube, adults reading it, because the culture in France or Japan is that, you know, absolutely, it's like films. You don't have to say films are just for children. You don't say books are just for children. Why should comics just be for children? And that mindset and that snobbery is something I really want to tackle.
Well, in the introduction, when I first started talking to you, I said it's a British comic book or graphic novel. Do you prefer the more politically correct term graphic novel, or is comic book just fine for you?
Comic book is fine for me. I mean, the graphic novel term came along to try and make it sound more adult, more literary worthy. Unfortunately, when I first started saying I write graphic novels, people thought I meant porn. But going back to what the vision we had, my vision was I want us to be one of the largest publishers of comics, renowned for quality, not quantity. And our mission as a company is to get more people reading comics, even if it's not our own titles, other people's titles. So that's always been straight from the start. But how we do it is constantly evolving. How we operate, our business model, everything keeps changing as market changes and as we learn and grow.
Mm. Well, you're certainly on the right track. And again, people can find out more information on your website, which is tpub.co.uk. They can find all the information about entering the Twisted Dark Short Film Competition. Congratulations again, Neil, and thank you very much for being on the program with us.
Well, thanks for having me. So I've got to ask you, Peter, have you ever made a short film?
Back in the day when I was a teenager, I made short films.
So you're going to enter the competition as well, are you? Fantastic news. Great.
We'll see, Neil. We'll see.
Great stuff.
Neil Gibson, founder and editor-in-chief of T-Pub. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for the show, which is show number 0381, and you'll find links to their website. Plus, T-Pub has put out an amazing short film called So Easy that's available on YouTube. It's really great. You got to check it out. You'll find the link for that at thestufffile.com.
You're listening to The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. You can email him at peter@thestufffile.com or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Kelly Alexander Show is your place to be for everything to do with health, lifestyle, and entertainment. Join us as we chat with celebrities like Emmy winner Mia Michaels from So You Think You Can Dance, best-selling recording artist Taylor Dane, and world-renowned astronaut Julie Payette. We also cover important topics like breast cancer awareness and how to help your child through bullying. All this and more, please join us, www.kellyalexandershow.com.
It's The Kelly Alexander Show.
Capture your need for sound.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Have you ever noticed on some of those public broadcasting pledge drives, they tend to sound like ransom demands in a kidnapping?
Hey, your kids like this, Mr. Rogers. It would be most unfortune if, for some unforeseen reason, you weren't in the neighborhood no more.
Well, I'm here to ask for your support in a non-threatening, non-obligatory kind of way. Part of the success of the Stuff File depends on the generosity of its listeners worldwide. So if you can, and if you want, please feel free to make a small one-time donation. Just go to the website at thestufffile.com and click on the PayPal donation button. You can donate $10, $5, or even $1, whatever you'd like.
You know that big bird? That would be one huge drumstick, if you know what I mean.
If you have a PayPal account, it's an easy transfer. And if you don't, all major credit cards are accepted. Your generosity would be much appreciated in keeping this show running.
About that antique roadshow, they might be seeing a little more concrete than they originally anticipated.
No strong-arm tactics, no ransom demands. Just a simple please and thank you. To donate, visit thestufffile.com.
You're listening to the Stuff File program. It's the choice of 4 out of 5 dentists. The 5th dentist also listens, but that's just because he follows the crowd. Here's Peter Anthony Holder.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk about creating legacies instead of arguments during the Christmas holiday dinner period. Collecting stories from the family, that's what we'll talk about. Plus, Peter Franklin, the Gabby Cabby, shares a slice of the Big Apple from his yellow mobile conveyance lounge. We do indeed have an idiot of the day coming your way, and lots more Stuff File news right here, right now. On a program also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Well, traffic cops and meter maids write tickets. That's what they do. That's their job. And you often hear the refrain of, "Sorry, I can't stop writing the ticket once I've started." It's like they have blinders on. Nothing is going to deter them from their goal of writing tickets. So, when an SUV was parked on the street just blocks away from the Broward County Courthouse in Florida for 4 days, city parking officials did what they were supposed to do: slap ticket after ticket on the windshield. Eventually, a curious citizen named Carolyn White, who noticed the pile of citations, did what officers couldn't be bothered to do. She looked through the windshield. What she found was the body of deceased Jacob Morpo. "Oh my God, please tell me this man isn't dead," White thought. He was sitting in the driver's seat, and his upper body lay face down over the SUV's center console. The SUV was issued tickets from November 12th through to November 15th. Two of the tickets were written within 3 minutes of each other and just 6 hours before White saw Morpo's body inside the SUV. White said, "I was being nosy. I never let the meter man catch me. I never get a parking ticket. And I wanted to know why somebody else got caught. And that's what made me look inside." She said she wonders why a parking officer didn't see what she saw. Morpo's family had not heard from him for a few days before his body was discovered, according to a Fort Lauderdale police report. But there's some good news in this story. An email from the assistant clerk said that the city has dismissed the $160 in parking fees due to extenuating circumstances. Isn't that a lovely sentiment? There's the human spirit. Actually, you know what I find even more disturbing about this story, besides the fact that people can write out tickets when someone is actually sitting in the driver's seat of the car dead? It's the idea that two tickets can be put on the same car within a 3-minute period. At the very least, you would think that someone who was writing out a ticket would look at the handful of tickets on the windshield to find out how long the vehicle might have been in violation. But no, that would take some kind of, oh, I don't know, common sense. Yikes. Anyway, police and firefighters were dispatched to a home in Merrimack, New Hampshire, after reports of an explosion with injury. When they arrived, they found a man lying on the ground suffering electrical burns. Investigators determined the unnamed man had been installing Christmas lights in a tree using a metal pole, which came into contact with a 19,900-volt primary power line. The jolt knocked the man to the ground and damaged several decorations in the house's front yard. The man was transported to the hospital, and the house was inspected and deemed safe. Oh, wow. This guy came dangerously close to being the idiot of the day, but he's not. That comes later. I will put in his candidacy as a card-carrying member of the Darwin Starter Kit Club, because clearly this numbskull will do something in the future to remove himself from the planet, so stay tuned. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, Iceland's foreign ministry filed legal action with the European Union Intellectual Property Office against Iceland Foods, a supermarket chain in the UK that has been operating under that name since 1970. It holds a trademark for Iceland for its 860 UK-based stores plus 40 others around Europe. Iceland, the country, claims the grocer has aggressively pursued and won multiple cases against Icelandic companies which use Iceland in their representation or as part of their trademark, while Iceland, the grocer, notes that it will vigorously defend Iceland Foods' established rights where there is any risk of confusion between our business and Iceland, the country. Interesting case indeed. I think I'll follow this one a lot more closely because, you know, speaking as a Canadian, I will watch the outcome of this case very closely, and depending on the outcome, I will then consider my next move when dealing with the Texas-based company that owns Canada Dry. Yeah. Anyway, let's get to our next guest here on the Stuff All program, shall we? This holiday season, as families gather around, instead of making small talk or arguing over politics, how about using the time to share family stories? That's the suggestion from Rob Lucy, who is author of Legacies Aren't Just for Dead People. Rob joins us on the line right now from Philadelphia. Hi, Rob.
Hi, Peter. Just gonna the title is Legacies Aren't Just for Dead People. They're for us folks that are alive and healthy. And building our legacies isn't just about money and sending it to the kids. It's about doing all sorts of things, like the stories you just mentioned.
Yeah. You know, when people get together for holidays, and I watched television shows from the United States just this past week where people were getting ready for Thanksgiving, and you hear these same stories before Thanksgiving in the States, before Christmas everywhere. Sometimes people dread the idea of the family get-together, and it's almost sad that they don't want to get together because they argue over politics or argue over the same family dynamics that they had when they were children. But you're saying there's another way of doing this.
Well, yeah, I think you really can enrich the experience over holidays by, I mean, I ask you, has there been a person in your life who left us, and you said, jeepers, I wish I grabbed their story? I think everybody's got that kind of experience. And so what can happen is with just a little bit of learning, you can start to gather the stories of grandma, of grandpa, of weird old Uncle Charlie, and get those stories so that they don't disappear when they go. And the value of it, I call them legacy stories, because then our descendants 100 years, 2 years from now, if I collected your story, would know that's great, 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 great Uncle Peter, who lived back in the 2000 years. And it's great for us to have those stories. I've got a picture of my great-grandparents who came in from Ireland to Canada around 1878, I think. And they settled in Northern Ontario, and I've got one picture of them, but I have nothing else. And would I love to have something about their life and what they thought of their life and the hardships and the love and the battles and all, just the kind of life they had to lead in that country. Well, we didn't do it, but now we have digital technology, which allows at the Christmas gathering to sit down with grandma and turn on the microphone and turn on the audio and just start asking her a few questions about her life. It'll be wonderful to have when she goes, and great for those, our descendants, 100 and 200 years from now.
You know, one of the things, though, I find, especially in my generation, I'm a late-end baby boomer, so when I talk about my generation, for instance, you go back to talking to people, and we're talking primarily the men in the family. A lot of them have literally war stories, but a lot of those people who have war stories don't want to share the war stories, unfortunately.
Well, I've got some direct experience in that. My father was in World War II, of course, and he was decorated by Monty. The Military Cross was painted on him. I went to Europe with Dad on D-Day, and then we years later we produced a book He wasn't a storyteller either, because those guys, they wanted to put that stuff aside. But once he started talking about the war, and it didn't get into the really bad stuff, although he glanced over it for sure, it was very liberating for him to tell those stories, because now his children, his grandchildren, his great-grandchildren and friends knew what the heck happened back then. So my counsel to anybody who has a grandma or grandpa or great-grandma, grandpa, male or female, that was in a war, sit down and chat with them. And you have to go about it softly. They don't have the skills that that you and I have as storytellers and journalists, but I teach there's one. You only need really one question to interview anybody. One question is all you need, and I talk about that in the book and how to use it. And I think once you get the story from the person whose story you don't want to disappear, it's a pretty fulfilling experience, and for both parties, both the receiver and the giver.
Mm. Now, I understand you say that there are three main areas for legacy building. What are they?
Well, I do. Yeah, in the book, I talk about. One area is called Tell Your Story, which is really about you. It's you, about you, Peter, and I teach about how to write a legacy letter, and that's talking about your values. Once people read this in the book, and they could have this legacy letter done in an hour, and it's a powerful document for your family when and if you go. You know, when I laugh a little bit in the book, say, if I'm hit by a herd of water buffalo tonight, my family has a legacy letter talking about my life and what I think I accomplished and what my values were, etc. So that's one type of legacy. That's you. Then we got the type we talked about a little bit here, and that's others: grandma, grandpa, weird old Uncle Charlie. I talk about how to create those stories and get those stories and package them so they don't disappear. And you can do it in any media you like. You can do it in audio or video or just print. But the key is to sit down with them. Most people have. You know, I'll say some excuses for not collecting those family stories, and that's what I think people listening now can. I address this in the book, but some people say there's no time. I talk about that you could sit down with somebody for an hour and just do some fabulous work, and it takes an hour. And if you don't have an hour, then, well, that's kind of too bad, but I think everybody has time. Some people say they don't have the skills. I talked about the one question they need. They may say, well, Uncle Charlie doesn't think he has a story. Everybody has a story. Once you get them going, you'll find that they'll start coming out with stuff that will just be amazing and great to grab. Some people say, well, I'm not technical. You know, how do I shoot a video? How do I do that? I deal with that. And then sometimes the person you're going to talk to says, well, no one will care. My dad said that. After a stunning experience on the continent in World War II, he said, why would anybody care? And I just said, well, your siblings, your son and your daughters and your great-grandchildren, great-grandchildren all care. To prove that, we launched his book in a museum in Calgary, and he said, well, I don't think anybody will care and be here. Well, there were 500 people there.
Wow.
And he was in tears pretty quickly, and all of us were, but it was a really warm, wonderful experience. So that's the second one, and that's a gathering story. So tell your stories, you. Gather your stories, just get those people, and then create stories. What I deal with in the book is how to use your signature strengths, your values, your strengths, your skills to build legacies, from a tiny little legacy like a corner garden to building an international charity. And I've done both of those, and it's fulfilling in that you connect to people and your life has more purpose to it, and it's darn fun. There's a smile on your face when you get it done.
While they do say that time heals all wounds, there are some people who don't want to talk about their past because it might have been traumatic. And you asking the question might not be aware of said trauma.
Yep, that's true.
How do you get around that?
And if somebody does push back saying, I don't want to talk about it, well, just respect that. And that's great. And can we move on to another area of their life, their education or their holidays or any other things you know about? But if somebody says, I don't want to talk about it, you know, but I found is once chatting for some more time, you kind of soften them up, and sometimes they'll go back into that dark part and give you an explanation, give you some perspective on it. But there's no need to go in it and be hard about trying to get it. If they don't want to talk about it, that's fine. Let's move on to something else so we get to know you and the joy you've had in your life and the challenges that you overcame and all the rest of them.
So what's it like at a gathering of the Lucy family? When you gather with your family, what kinds of questions do you ask? Or how do you get the conversation started?
Well, there's they're in the book. Here, is a neat one that happens, and even down to young folks. It doesn't have to be boomers like us, because boomers want the stories of our parents. And we want the stories. There's large studies saying boomers want just the stories. We don't care about the financial stuff. But then what about those kids that are 14 and 16 and 22, and if they want to be, be gathering stories at Christmas also? There's a list of questions I have in the book, and some of them seem simple, but are very quite deep. So if I said to you, Peter, tell me about a person that affected you, you're going to have to put a little bit of thought to that, and then that wonderful verb effect. How did that person affect you? Once you start telling us about how that affected you, I would sit around as a family, and I tell you, sometimes families have no idea that that person had an effect in your life. Or I would say how an event that affected you, or a film that affected you, or a book that affected you. We did this at the turn of the century in the year 2000 with a bunch of friends, all of us, 50-ish. And it was an amazing experience with a ton of tears, and everybody got to know each other so much better. And that can happen in a Christmas dinner table, when say, okay, let's just go around and let's talk about a movie that affected you. And that's not my favorite movie. It's a movie that kind of shook me and still his message is still with me now. Most people are quite happy to talk about that, about their own experience. So there's a variety of questions like that. And then you get into, then when you're going to start to interview somebody for their specific stories, like Weird Old Uncle Harry, there's lots of other different questions to ask. But those ones will get the family going, the effect questions that I just mentioned. Those will get a family going. There'll be lots of emotion, probably lots of laughter and tears, but they're all healthy, and all that. And the resulting comments is, I didn't know that about you. I didn't know you, were scared of spiders. Well, I don't know.
Well, we've got just about a minute, but I do want to ask you before I let you go. I understand you also teach this as well, right?
Yeah, when the book came out, a university in British Columbia called Simon Fraser asked me to create a course. So we've got people coming in who are about 55 years and older, and we teach them how to tell some of their own legacy stories so those stories don't die. And it's a very emotional affair. They learn how to structure and write and produce a story in video, and then we show it to them and all their families. And it's a very emotional experience for them all, because they never thought they'd see one of their stories up in lights. And it's a lot of fun to deal with them, and there's a whole bunch of learning for them too, to say that they shouldn't have been afraid to tell this story, because people love hearing and watching them.
Mm. People can find out more information by going to your website, which is yourlegacysmile.com, correct?
Yes, that's correct. Yep.
Yourlegacysmile.com. Rob, thank you very, very much for taking the time to be on the program with us.
Thanks, Peter. I hope people enjoyed it, and happy Christmas to all of you.
Rob Lucy, author of Legacies Aren't Just for Dead People. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0381, and you'll find links to Rob's site, plus links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can order his book directly. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
I'm Bob DiRigo Jones, and this is Let's Be Fair. When looking at all the ridiculous lawsuits that come across my desk every week, I'm often reminded of the old quote attributed to the famous circus promoter P.T. Barnum that goes, "There's a sucker born every minute." But did you know that Barnum never actually said that? Here's the story. In the 1860s, a New York man carved a huge rock to look like a giant human being and claimed he found it buried in the ground. A banker then bought it and began charging the public admission to see what he claimed was a real prehistoric giant. P.T. Barnum then offered to buy it for his circus, but the banker refused, so Barnum made a duplicate and claimed he bought it from the banker. After he started making a fortune, the banker sued him and said of the crowds visiting Barnum's giant, "There's a sucker born every minute." Let's be fair. During the trial, it was revealed that both giants were fakes. The lesson? Don't sue a scammer if you're a scammer too. Learn more. Visit our website at centerforamericatv.org.
If you or someone you care about is struggling with food and body image issues, don't ignore the signs. Eating disorders are serious, potentially life-threatening illnesses, but recovery is possible, and you don't have to suffer alone. Call the National Eating Disorders Association helpline at 800-931-2237 or visit nationaleatingdisorders.org to take a confidential online eating disorder screening. Recovery is possible.
Latitude, 47 degrees, 14 minutes north. Longitude, 84 degrees, 39 minutes west. Location, Montreal, Canada. This is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
The Stuff File presents The Gabby Cabby, direct from his yellow mobile conveyance lounge in the city that never sleeps, New York. Once again, here's Peter Anthony Holder.
And we do indeed have Peter Franklin, the Gabby Cabby from New York City. Hello, sir.
Hello, hello. Live from the streets of New York, which are getting a little nippy and very Christmassy.
And very busy, and I'll get to that in a moment. But first, I want to talk about the most recent news, at least of this past weekend, the fact that Fidel Castro has passed away. And I'm curious to know what effect, if any, that has in the New York area. I know it's a big news in the Florida area.
Yeah, well, it's also a big news in the New York area. We have a very large area in the northeast part of Manhattan, one of our five boroughs. It's called Spanish Harlem, to distinguish it from Black Harlem, meaning that in Black Harlem you have black people. I think that's kind of obvious. And in Spanish Harlem, it really should be Latino. Spanish is not a good description, but it's Spanish Harlem. Anyway, Spanish Harlem, just to show you how we have our own little apartheid in New York, voluntary, of course, you have different categories, meaning you'll have an area of Cubans, you'll have an area of Puerto Ricans. I mean, we really define, you know, what the person's origin is. Anyway, we have a large Cuban community, and they're very happy. They're doing everything but dancing in the street. They hated the man, and the reason they hated the man, that's why most of them were here, because the kind of Latinos that you would have from Cuba in New York City and in Miami were either chased out of Cuba or ran out of Cuba. So they're not really dancing in the streets physically, but emotionally, psychologically, they are happy the guy's dead.
By the way, there were two black people, at least in Spanish Harlem, Benny King and also your cousin Aretha Franklin, who both had hits.
Yeah, well,
that
you're
song.
The master of trivia. Who else in the world would know that except you?
Speaking
but
of,
but I'll tell you, an Aretha. Wait
yes?
a minute. You want to listen? I know I'm taking control of your show.
Yes.
But I got a great Aretha Franklin story for you if you want it.
Please share.
Okay, I got called up once upon a time by the David Letterman show, and they wanted to know whether I'd like to be on it to interview me because of my exploits as the Gabby Cabby. And I said no. And the reason I said no is that I just felt I wasn't going to do mental battle with Letterman and, you know, trade line for line or that or anything. I sensed that he had some kind of ulterior motive. Not that he was going to attack me, but I was going to be used in some way, so I did the unheard thing of saying, no, I don't want to be on the show. And his producer said to me, well, you know, that means we'll never ask you again. I said, well, I guess you'll never ask me again. I subsequently found out that, and I'm sorry afterwards, boy, I subsequently found out after that he was having Aretha Franklin on as a guest, and as part of his shtick, it was going to be Aretha Franklin meet Peter Franklin, the cab driver. So then I felt very bad. Oh, I said, my God, did I make a mistake? Because I didn't care about Letterman, but I would have loved to have met her.
Mm. Well, you'll still always have a chance. You'll still always have a chance. Meanwhile,
well, I'm waiting for
as I was saying earlier, the streets of New York are pretty busy these days, and one in particular, Fifth Avenue. We haven't chatted since the Donald became president-elect. I know it's been a bit of a field day in the New York area around Trump Tower. I've been dying to get your take on the whole thing.
Well, can I first apologize for putting you through a year and a half of nonsense?
Well,
on behalf of the American public, I'm apologizing.
Okay, okay.
It was like the longest-running sitcom in the history of radio and television. In any event, the guy's president-elect, maybe not for long, because you probably know by now they're starting to think of contesting the election, and they're messing around with the basic foundation of the American voting procedures, so I think it's a dangerous thing. But in any event, like all of our presidents, he's entitled to security. And of course, where his building is, where he lives, is the worst possible place as far as security goes, because it's right smack in the middle of Fifth Avenue, right smack next to Rockefeller Center and the ice skating rink and the Radio City Music Hall and the NBC Studios and in the Saks Fifth Avenue, Tiffany's. I mean, so now you go there and it's like very bizarre because you got lots of cops standing around with machine guns of all things. You know, you don't generally see New York cops with steel pots and machine guns, so it's very heavily guarded. But at the same time, they're not stopping people from walking into the area. They're not even stopping people from walking into his apartment house. But they certainly are there, and they're very scary.
Mm. I understand it's and the city of New York itself is putting out $1 million a day in cost to protect that area and the building, and that the Secret Service has rented an entire floor out in the Trump building, which will cost them $1.5 million a year.
Yeah, well, again, it's not, you know, you can't really blame Trump for it, because that would be with any president or president-elect. And New York always sends the bill to Washington. Like, for instance, if we're having a session, the General Assembly of the UN is meeting, or if Fidel Castro is coming to New York City, he won't be coming this week. But, you know, when he did come, they will always send the bill to the government. In most instances, they pay for it. But nothing is going on with this thing with Trump that's unusual from any other president-elect. It's just that the media just doesn't like him, so they're going after him and blaming. You know, they're saying, look at all this is costing insecurity. Well, that happens every time.
Well, I know this is not your style, but how would you like to be one of the people who also happens to live in Trump Towers right about now?
Oh, of course. But then you see that happen. Yeah, but I've got to tell you something. That happens all over the city. Most of the buildings, including Trump Tower, are co-ops. You have to buy the apartment. So, for instance, if I owned an apartment in Trump Tower and I wanted to sell it to you, the board might say, no, you're not selling it to him. And by the way, as long as it's not race or religion, they can vote you down, one of which would be you're an entertainer or you're a broadcaster. We don't want that in our building. So that's what's happening now. These people are going to try to sell their apartments, but before they do, the first thing they're going to say is that Trump is violating his contract by having all this stuff going on. But by that time, he'll be in the White House. So again, it'd be no big deal.
Mm. Meanwhile, one of the other things that people know New York for is the diners that are here, there, and everywhere that are relatively famous. When people go to town, they want to go have the diner experience. But I understand you're losing a lot of them.
Yeah, tremendous. They you know, and they're really hangouts, and they're, I mean, I guess the best example I can give you, which is not going out of business, is like, for instance, the Seinfeld Diner. And there actually is a Seinfeld Diner, by the way, and they're doing quite well, so they're not in trouble. But I'm using them as an example for your nice listeners, you know, who've probably seen the show. You know, it has the little booths, the little tables. It's where you go and you get a cheeseburger well done, a vanilla milkshake, rice pudding, you know, coffee, bagel, cream cheese. But, you know, the rents are going up and up and up, and it's on every other corner. There's a new bank going up. And I'll bet you can't guess, here's a loaded question for you, what bank is putting branches into New York City and taking over a lot of the diner places like crazy? I'll give you 3 seconds and then your time is up.
I know what you're going to say, because it's a Canadian bank that actually has more branches in the United States than it has in Canada.
This guy is amazing.
The
Ladies
TD Bank.
Gentlemen, this guy is amazing.
The TD
you're
Bank.
You're going to say TD, right?
Yep. TD Bank.
Yeah, no, they're all over the place.
Yep.
And for some strange reason, they don't advertise that they're a Canadian bank. I mean, that's not bad. You know, it's not like, ooh, let's not tell people we're Canadians. But I'm one of the few New Yorkers who knows where they come from. Very nice bank, very highly regarded. As a matter of fact, I think we just did a commercial for them. But that's what's happening. The banks, not particularly only TD, but banks and organizations like that move in, and they pay the higher rents, which the diners can't.
So are you telling people that the TD stands for Toronto Dominion?
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, I walk up on this, I say, psst, hey, you want to hear a secret? I got a secret for you. No, I don't know that they're hiding it. I guess they don't want to promote that they're a Canadian bank because they think that that's going to hurt them in some way. No, it isn't. I mean, there's no animosity. I hate to tell you, but as far as New Yorkers in Canada go, and this is going to rub every Canadian listener you have, you're like a little brother, you know? What can I tell you? Nobody hates you.
So now, with all these diners going, someone gets into your cab, and everyone who has a chance to go to New York City should get into your cab. If someone says to you, you know, Peter, Mr. Gabby Cabby, I want to enjoy the true diner experience in New York, where would you take them?
I take them to the Seinfeld Diner.
Ah.
Because it is, in addition to its notoriety from the television show, a neighborhood diner which is very, very good. The portions are very, very large. Seems like, again, I'm doing a commercial. And it's a good diner. But you see, after that, I'd have to think about it for a while, for a second or third, because of the very story we're talking about.
Hmm. Times, they are a change. And meanwhile, I got to let you go. We're running out of time. But I do want to talk about a celebrity sighting you had. And when I say the times they are changing, this seems to be a throwback to one of the bigger Broadway shows of the last few decades.
Yeah, well, you know, as I always like to say, it's not unusual to see a celebrity on the streets of New York. And I guess I'm having a senior moment because his name escapes me, the play guy.
Yeah, Andrew Lloyd Webber.
Andrew, thank you. See, I'm glad I brought you along. That shows we don't rehearse this stuff. No, he was just in the Broadway Times Square area. And at first when I saw him, I said, who is he again? Because I know this guy from someplace. And so he was walking on the street just with a couple of people. And most people just walk by him because I don't think he's well known, but I don't think he's that well known visually. I mean, look, I just forgot his name. That shows you how big I am, thanks to you.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm sure a lot of people, their heads would turn if they saw Peter Franklin walking by. I'm sure.
Yeah, they say that's the guy that talks to Peter Anthony Holder.
People can always find out more information by going to your website, which is gabby.com, G-A-B-B-Y.com. And they can send you an email, peter@gabby.com. Peter, it's always a pleasure to have you on the program.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
The Stuff File.
And we're just about out of racetrack for this edition of the Stuff File program. We do have an idiot of the day coming your way in just a matter of moments, but I got a few more Stuff File news stories to share with you here on a program also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Well, as you know, it takes all kinds to make this world. If you're unaware of that, let me enlighten you. Activists told Vice Media in November that 100,000 people worldwide identify as ecosexuals, ranging from those who campaign for sustainable ingredient sex toys to those who claim to have intercourse with trees, but sanding the bark for comfort might provoke concern about being abusive. A University of Nevada, Las Vegas professor studies the phenomenon and knows, for example, of humans who marry the earth or prefer sex while rolling in potting soil or under a waterfall. On one arborphilia support blog, and yes, apparently there's more than one arborphilia support blog, a female poster regretted her choice to have convenient sex with a sycamore outside of her bedroom window instead of the sturdy redwood she actually covets. Yes, some mainstream environmentalists somehow are not completely supportive of all this. Let me get this straight. Was that last woman two-timing a tree? Yikes. And a deer hit a car in Tennessee and went airborne and struck someone walking by hard enough to break some of the pedestrian's bones. Clarksville Police Spokeswoman Officer Natalie Hall said a driver hit a deer Thursday evening near downtown Clarksville. The animal flew off the car and hit a pedestrian who was treated at Tenova Healthcare for broken bones. Officer Hall added that it's not the type of crash that happens often. Well, duh. Wow, hit by a flying deer near Christmas. I'll bet that pedestrian now has a chronic fear of Santa. Anyway, we've now reached that moment, boys and girls in the program, that you've all been waiting for. You know what it is. Yes, indeed. It's time once again for the Idiot of the Day.
And now it's time for the strange things adults do. This Stuff File presents the Idiot of the Day.
This robbery failed before it began. The bank was closed. Austrian police have arrested a man they say tried to rob a bank in Vienna, but arrived too early. Police spokesman Patrick Meyerhofer says the 45-year-old suspect entered the bank foyer armed with a gas pistol and with a hood drawn over his head, but 15 minutes before opening time. He says that passers-by alerted police after the man hid his weapon under newspapers and paced nervously as he waited for the main doors to open. Police say his planned getaway vehicle was a stolen scooter. Now, why? Oh, why? If you're planning a bank robbery, would you not know the bank hours? But after discovering you're too early, you'd hang around waiting for it to open? Why would you do that? Why? Why? Well, one reason, and one reason only. You're an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program number 0381. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com. And once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links on all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and once again, that's 0381. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as P.A. Holder. And don't forget to check out the Stuff File store, where you can purchase a plethora of Stuff File merchandise, from t-shirts to mugs to tote bags to mouse pads. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, GDPR Revolution 99, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, PCJ Radio International and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded on iTunes, streaming on Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. That's it. Bye-bye.
Been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. Void where prohibited, offer slightly different in Canada. For a complete transcript of this program, next time write down everything Peter says.